Court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Welcome to Court Appointed, Two Dudes' Perspective on Legal Frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
So for today's episode, we thought we'd discuss a issue that happens all the time on the internet.
Hello, all you cool babies. Don't drill a hole in your head.
What are you doing? I already did our intro, and that's not our lines.
Well, those are catchphrases that work for some of our associated podcasts, so I thought I would use them to, you know, make us more popular.
You can't steal your daughter's ideas.
Well, they won't mind. They're related to me.
Did you get their permission to use them? It's their intellectual property.
Their what?
Intellectual property. It's something that they thought of, and they use it as part of their branding. It belongs to them.
But it's just words. I mean, and after I get hold of them, there's nothing intellectual about them. I mean, if ignorance is bliss, then I'm a saint. I've got witnesses to that.
That is true. intellectual property basically then includes trademarks, copyrights, patents, industrial design rights, and in some jurisdictions, trade secrets for businesses.
Like the formula to Coca-Cola?
Exactly. That would be a trade secret. It's supposedly kept in a vault in Atlanta, I think.
It's in the vault. In Atlanta?
I think so.
That's where they're headquartered, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. My only expertise on Coke comes from watching Scarface. The trade secrets are intellectual property that falls under this. For anything that's intellectual property, generally it falls under what's called a patent bar. So lawyers are actually admitted to a separate bar to be a patent lawyer. A lot of times people that have engineering backgrounds start getting into patent law, and they take the separate bar exam. And I am actually not a member of the patent bar, and I don't know too much about IP. And that's what we call it in the legal biz, IP.
IP. IP freely.
I just knew that was going to be a hit with you. The origins of copyright law, much like most of our law, traces back to England. And one of the historical doctrines that is the basis of our modern
day. Please let Lodowick be involved. Please let Lodowick be involved. Please let Lodowick be involved.
I don't think Lodowick's involved in this one.
Ah, damn it.
Because this predates Lodowick, and this is in England, and Lodowick was in Rhode Island or something like that.
Oh, I thought that was an England thing.
No, so.
So we had a Lodowick over here?
So yeah. Keeping this moving forward on the current topic.
Sorry.
The statute of monopolies was actually something back in England in 1624, and this is what we date part of our copyright laws back to.
So is that what the board game's based on?
Quite possibly. So I'd never really heard about the statute of monopolies before, so I had to kind of research it.
What's the penalty for violating the statute of monopoly?
I can only assume it's you're not allowed to pass go and collect your 200 pounds. I don't know.
Oh, no, I should have said that.
Yeah, that was a softball.
You're killing my bit.
That was a softball. So this is the basis of...
At least it wasn't a Pokeball.
This is the basis of UK IP law.
UK IP law. You lawyers like all these letter alphabet soup emblem things.
Yeah, well, you know, you gotta throw out these acronyms when you know them. But anyway, this was the basis of UK IP law until 1977. UK began following the European Patent Convention in 1977. So in some ways, it was actually the statute of monopolies lasted in England for quite some time. Another thing that we trace our patent law back to was this thing called the Statute of Anne. That's the Copyright Act of 1709.
Statute of Anne, like the name Anne?
Yeah, Anne. And this came about pretty much from what I researched about because of the invention of the printing press in England. And they determined that the value of these literary works needed to be protected. So, and basically, a lot of IP law is based on what's called public policy. And public policy is what really underpins a lot of our laws. And it's just the kind of the argument that there needs to be some law in place because it's going to serve the public some good.
So if somebody has a good idea, they should get paid for it. So somebody else can't come along and grab it from them.
Exactly. Because if you don't protect the actual ideas that people have, then that gives no incentive for people to want to come up with these ideas.
That's probably what happened to me. I haven't had an idea in years. I've never been incentivized.
So it's not surprising that a lot of these different kinds of laws and what came into play whenever inventions and different things happened, especially during like the Age of Enlightenment and things like that, because that's when knowledge started becoming, you know, kind of important again out of the Dark Ages, I guess. So one of the people that was actually really critical of all this was an English philosopher during the Age of Enlightenment. And he's actually a guy who influenced many of our American revolutionaries and kind of gave us the whole theory behind our country. And his name was John Locke. Have you ever heard of him before?
John Locke, that name does sound familiar. Did he invent like your standard padlock?
No, he did not. See, and I really thought when I said John Locke, you're going to say the dude from Lost.
Oh, I never watched that show.
You never watched Lost?
No.
Oh.
I couldn't find it.
Oh, my God. John Locke was a philosopher. And like I said, he influenced a lot of our basic American kind of ideologies from the Revolutionary period. So I thought one of the newer things in patent and copyright law is something called the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, or the DMCA.
Digital Millennium Copyright Act, DMCA. No wonder they abbreviated that one. That's a mouthful.
Yeah. Whenever I see DMCA, they always think of like Run DMC.
Run DMCA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It always makes me think of that.
They brought Aerosmith back.
Yeah, they did. They were pretty... I guess I don't think I'd really heard of Aerosmith before.
What?
No, I hadn't.
You'd never heard of Aerosmith?
No, because like I was kind of in that window where I didn't really hear about them, and then Run DMC came out, and I was like, oh, this is pretty good, and I started kind of discovering them.
Well, the Toxic Twins were on hiatus there for a while. They snorted up most of Peru, and they couldn't get their music back together, and Run DMC came out, did one of their songs with them, and brought them back, and the rest, shall we say, is history.
The Thompson Twins, is that what you said?
Not the Thompson Twins, the Toxic Twins.
Who are the Toxic Twins?
Steven Tyler and Joe Perry.
Oh.
That's what they called themselves, the Toxic Twins. They said they figured they snorted up half of Peru.
Huh. I don't doubt that.
I believe they had a slight drug problem, but it's all better now.
I bet they knew Coke's secret formula.
They knew Coke's secret formula inside and out. They didn't go to Atlanta either. They did their own research.
Hello, Atlanta.
Everything's better with Coke.
That's what they tell me. Especially around.
You think we get paid for that? Is that an ad?
I don't know.
Yeah, I doubt it. That was an idea of mine, so it's not going to work out.
Yeah. So
I have no intellectual to go with my property.
The DMCA is a copyright law in the U.S. from 1998. These are kind of the notices that you see all the time if you're on YouTube, like something's been taken down because of a DMCA notice. And a lot of times on the internet, whenever there's kind of information on the internet that's somebody else's property, people file these DMCA takedown notices. If you ever see that on the internet, that's what that stems from, is the U.S. copyright law, which was signed into law by Bill Clinton in 1998.
So is that like back when music was being shared all over the place on the internet and everybody was grabbing all these free songs and they were trying to figure out how to stop it and then they started coming out? Is that what they used to stop that?
Probably. I mean, they probably knew that basically the technology was moving in that direction. It was signed in law in 1998, and one of the really big things that happened with music, I think it happened in probably 99. That was when Napster came out, and Napster was the
file sharing god of music.
Yeah, that's when my music collection grew extensively.
Don't say that. The statute of limitations hadn't run out yet.
I was buying a lot of CDs at the time.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. Okay.
It's all on the up and up, Mr. Ossifer.
I don't know what you're implying. But Napster was the huge file sharing thing, obviously, that everybody kind of started taking everybody's music and sharing it around. So one of the like more recent cases Viacom, the media giant, sued YouTube, and they were basically saying that YouTube was a massive intentional copyright infringement machine that had infringed about $1 billion in damages for them for sharing all their intellectual property.
Man, yeah. Usually it's good to be massive. It doesn't sound like it's good to be massive in this case.
No, it's not. I mean, that's a huge. I mean, to claim $1 billion in damages, that's quite a large number. That case was actually dismissed because YouTube won on summary judgment, saying that as a matter of law, that they were shielded under the safe harbor provisions of the DMCA. Most all cases, that was appealed and overturned and sent back to the court. But then the court again dismissed on summary judgment again.
So they didn't get anything out of it.
No, they didn't get anything out of it. And YouTube is still here today.
Well, that's good.
Some other things that music people are doing, they put DRM or digital rights management, which basically controls the music and different things, which allows where you can copy it and transfer it and put things like that. And that causes quite an uproar with people, too, because if you buy music and then you're not allowed to copy it and make a copy for yourself, like a backup and things like that, that can cause some issues. And some people get upset about that.
So they tell you don't do that. You're not allowed to copy your own CD.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of infuriating if like you buy music or buy some CD or something like that, and you're not allowed to actually copy it because there's some sort of protection on there.
So. I think I've heard stories where people do that anyway.
They might, yeah.
I don't know any of them, so there's no sense asking me about it, but I think there are some. So does that cover music? Like, I remember hearing a story, well, not hearing, I read the story. I actually read. There was a story that Paul McCartney once advised Michael Jackson that he should buy up rights to music as a good investment. Well, Michael Jackson promptly went out and bought up all the rights to the Beatles music. And then Paul McCartney was like, hey, wait a minute. I want the rights to my own songs. And Michael Jackson was like, sorry, I followed your advice and I have it now. And Paul said, like, bloody hell, you know. And I don't know. I think he kept them for a long time. I think maybe after Michael Jackson died, Paul got them back. I'm not positive about that. I think so.
Yeah, well, that sounds like reasonable. I don't know. But yeah, like, I think a lot of times when recording artists, when they sign with different labels and whatnot, part of what they're signing away is the rights to the music. So it wouldn't be surprising to say that, you know, like Beatles or some other act basically signed away their rights to some recording label.
So the label had the rights. The artist actually didn't have the right.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Most likely. Just because you come up, I think when you come up with the idea, it's yours. But if you have some sort of contract in place that says like certain ideas you come up with belong to someone else.
Oh, okay.
Like a lot of times if you see, people that are engineers and work for large companies and things like that, and they're designing things, there will be provisions in their employment contract which says that any intellectual property that you come up with belongs to that company. And a lot of times if you have two companies working together on certain projects, the agreements will even say that, hey, if we come up with intellectual property together, then it's going to belong to our company. And we grant you a right to use that intellectual property, but it's still ours, but you have the right to use it forever. So intellectual property a lot of times is contracted away and shifted to different people and who owns it.
Well, I can understand that part about work. I mean, you are supposed to be working. So if you're spending your time inventing something else for your own purposes, then, you know, I would think the company you're working for should have some kind of rights to it because you're on their time. Yeah. They're paying you to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if part of your job is to design soundboards and you come up with some sort of doohickey that you put onto a soundboard that makes them way more efficient and you start, you know, integrating that into your work, obviously it belongs to the company you're working for at that point.
Samuel Doe, the inventor of the soundboard doohickey. He will go down in history.
But I mean, I think also too, if your job is working as a metallurgist or something at some large company that fabricates metal and I don't know, I'm totally making this up as I go. I would be horrible making up law school questions. So if you're,
you probably have more time to think than you have right here doing this podcast.
That's true. But if your job is completely unrelated, but even if you have that kind of provision in your employment contract, if you come up with some idea outside of the scope of your work that's totally not related to it, I don't think your company would have a claim to that invention or that patent, even though you may have a contract that says they're entitled to it because it doesn't come from the scope of your work.
And you're not doing it on their time.
Yeah, you're not doing it on their time.
That would probably be a main function there. All right, now, there's one that's been in the news here lately that I was rooting for, and that was Led Zeppelin being sued over their song Stairway to Heaven. And there was a group named Spirit, I believe it was, and their lead singer was like Randy California, but that wasn't his real name.
That's a great name.
That's a great name, but that wasn't his real name. He changed it. Now, I mean, Joe Montana, that is his real name.
Yeah.
And that's a cool name, too.
That is.
That's his real name.
Is it really?
Joe Montana? Yeah, you can't make that up. He's in football. You're not allowed to make up your name if you're in football.
I don't know. I think football players change their name. That one guy changed his name to He Hate Me.
He Hate Me. Oh, yeah. And in basketball, there's World Be Free. Ah, but I digress. The main point is, anyway, is that they played together way back when Led Zeppelin was first starting and Spirit was on the road with them. And there was a riff in there that sounded a lot like, because I listened to it, sounded a lot like the beginning intro to Stairway to Heaven. So after Randy California died, his estate went back and sued Led Zeppelin and said, hey, he's the real creator of it. Now, I don't buy that. Yes, the riff sounds like that, but there's a whole lot more to that song than the beginning riff. And not only that, if you ask me, there's only so many notes. So mathematical equations, there's only so many combinations. Eventually, there's a lot of things that are going to sound like a lot of things. I hear a song all the time and I'll say, you know, that song, when it starts, it reminds me of this other song from maybe 20, 30 years ago or whatever. And right. So, you know, I don't see how you can say that in music, that he stole my song, unless he outright stole the whole song right on down the line. It sounds just like, and he just changed a few words or something.
I mean, I heard this thing on the radio when they were talking about, I heard the Spirit intro and I heard the Led Zeppelin song. I got to say, it sounded pretty similar.
It does. It sounds real similar. But there's a lot more to that song, you know. And Robert Plant wrote the music and wrote the words. Jimmy Page, I guess, did the music. And he's the one that, you know, copied the riff, if it was copied.
How much do you think you would absolutely hate the song Stairway to Heaven if you were on a jury and you had to listen to Stairway to Heaven over and over and over again to determine whether or not it was a copy of it?
I wouldn't mind. I could never hate Stairway to Heaven.
You could never hate Stairway to Heaven.
It's not the greatest song, but it is in the top 10. My actual favorite Led Zeppelin song, for whatever that's worth, is Kashmir.
Oh, that's a good song, too.
Yeah, that's my default ringtone.
Yeah, I didn't realize until pretty recently that a lot of their songs are related to, like, with Lord of the Rings and Tolkien, like... talking about Mordor and things like that.
Oh, yeah. They were big into the Nordic lore and all that kind of stuff. I read their book, Hammer of the Gods. Great book. Mm-hmm. Got a lot of inside info about them. Probably things you don't even want to know.
You should write a book about them.
Everything I know came from that book. I just have to plagiarize that book. And yeah. That's a big no-no.
You could call it Mallet of the Lords.
Mallet of the Lords? Is that all it takes?
I don't know.
Well, I could try that. I tell you, I have this idea. I could try to write the next big Broadway hit. You know, I've already thought it up. It would be called Spamilton. It would combine Spamalot and Hamilton, and it would be about old English guys rapping their way across the New America in search of the Holy Grail of beer. So there, while Lin-Manuel Miranda is off doing Mary Poppins, I don't mean doing Mary Poppins, I mean doing the remake of Mary Poppins or the second part, I'll write his follow-up to Hamilton, be Spamilton. We'll have the Knights of Knee in there, and they'll be rapping as they go.
I think you got to change it up a bit more.
Yeah, change it up. That's not enough, I'd say. We're the Knights of Knee, and we say knee, knee. Well, that's not a good example because their vocabulary is too limited. That wouldn't work too well. I'd come up with a better one than that. Hey, did you hear the Knights of St. Knee went to a bar the other night called the Elbow Room? They walked in, the bartender said, hey, guys, you're in the wrong joint. Do you get it? Joint.
Yeah, I got it.
Their knee, it's an elbow room.
You're going to do a rap-filled Spamalot?
Yeah, not Spamalot. Spamilton. Yeah. Spamalot and Hamilton combined.
I thought you said you don't like to rap.
Oh, well, you know, $23 million can change a lot of things. So it just so happens that's a perfect segue into what I have brought for us today.
What's that?
Well, have you heard that Kanye has come up with a rap mentioning Zuckerberg's name since our last conversation?
No, I actually haven't. I haven't been following up on my Entertainment Tonight.
Good. That means that I beat him to it. and I will get the $23 million. Now who's the genius? What?
I don't think Zuckerberg's going to give away $23 million for rapping his name.
You said that if we just used his name in a rap, that would probably get it. And if I remember my business law from a long time ago, that's an implied contract. I saw that on Night Court, too.
I can't give an implied contract for Mark Zuckerberg. I mean, if I was maybe an agent or representative of Mark Zuckerberg, then you might have an argument that, oh, yeah, there's an implied contract. But, yeah, I don't think that what
all right,
I said
but is... But do you know that he's not giving away $23 million for the first one that sings a rap with his name in it?
I guess I technically don't.
Then I rest my case. No further questions. I will take a chance at that $23 million. Take my swing for it. Now drop me a beat.
What?
Drop me a beat. Come on, that thing that people do with their mouths, you know, like music, but you do it with your mouth, you know. You know, it's also called beatboxing, I think. Now do that.
Well, first of all, you just spit in my eye. What makes you think I can do that?
All young guys know how to do that. It's a thing. It's like apps or Snapchat or Pokemans.
How have you even heard about this?
I watched a whole season of Pitch Slapped. Now, drop me a beat while I apologize to my daughter, Sydney Taylor and Riley, because no kid ever wants to see their parent rapping. So I'm sorry, girls, but it's my job. It's my duty. I'm here to provide entertainment and to possibly provide a better future for us when I obtain this $23 million. All right, now start the beat, dude.
Does it need to be a fast beat, a slow beat? Or what kind of beat are we talking here?
Just give me a beat. I'm flexible. I'm fluid, man. I'm fresh.
Boom, tch, boom, tch, boom, tch, boom, tch,
I'm a cowboy, tch. Baby.
That's what's his name. That's not your line. You can't say that. That's Kid Rock.
Just keep going. Keep going. Pick up the beat.
Boom, tch, boom, tch, boom, tch, boom, tch,
no
boom,
sleep boom, till boom, Brooklyn.
That's the Beastie Boys.
I didn't ask you to comment on it. Come on. Here we go now. Start the beat.
Boomts, 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 boomts.
Gangster Mark Zuckerberg is where it all begins. He was hanging with his homies, the Winklevoss twins. They was coding and IPing on a new computer app when the twins both said in unison, "We got it, holy crap. We can meet new females and never leave our nook on a program we invented that we call Facebook. Facebook, yo, Facebook, yo. It ain't got no book, but it's got your face, yo." Hey, I'm not done yet. You're not beaten.
I can't. I'm speechless.
I need some more beating going on there. I've got another verse to finish up here.
Boomps, 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 boomps.
Now, Z-Man liked the boomps. Sound of this brand new site, so we wrote it down and mailed it to his own self overnight. When he got the mail the very next day, he went to the Winklevi and had a lot to say. Now I own the Facebook site. There's nothing you can do. I'm going to be a billionaire. Don't like it, you can sue. You got to get up early to beat me if you could. With a name like Zucker's, it's got to be good. Yo!
What are you doing with the microphone?
I dropped it.
Yeah, that's...
I dropped the mic. That's what you do when you win a rap battle. You drop the mic.
I don't think...
And I just did it. I just beat Kanye to the $23 million. Yo, who's the genius?
Nobody was battling.
Nobody's battling.
Well, in your rap, I noticed that you mentioned something about mailing yourself a copy of your own work.
Yeah, well, you've heard that, haven't you? That if you want to trademark something or make it yours or copyright or something like that, all you got to do is write it down and mail it to yourself, and that makes it legal.
Well, actually, that doesn't work in the United States.
What?
Yeah.
Everybody does. I've heard that.
That's a common misconception.
A long time.
It's actually something that people do in the UK or France, and it's called a solo envelope. S-O-L-E-A-U. I don't know how to pronounce solo. So there is that actually in the UK and France. And what it is, it basically the theory is in the United States is that you would mail yourself a copy of your own work. Like if you write a book.
Correct.
You mail it to yourself.
Correct.
And then you own it.
That's right.
Because you can prove that in time you were the first one to come up with that because it's postmarked.
Yeah, that's what I assume. The postmark does it.
Right. Well, the only problem with that is our basis of patent and copyright law in the United States is not necessarily based on the time as when you invent it, but it's actually based on the first to file or like the recording of it with our patent, with the patent office or the trademark office, the copyright office. So you need to not only have the idea first, you actually need to record it first or prove that you have it first.
So mailing it doesn't do it. You've got to take it to like a patent office or something like that.
Yeah, you can file a patent. And also there also is if you are using it in general use, and there's can be exceptions for that as well. But as again, like I said, I'm not a patent lawyer, but, yeah, generally it's like a race to file it. That's the most important thing. So, and it's so important actually that you have a certain date that predates things when you file it. A lot of times when companies and people come up with different ideas or modifications to certain ideas, like say if you have a pen and it's just basically your regular Bic pen that has a cap on the top, and so you file a patent for that, like, oh, you know, I invented this pen. And so then if you come up with another invention and it's a pen but it has a little push button on top that pushes the writing implement part in and out.
I think I've seen one of those.
I know. I don't think I'm coming up with it.
Oh.
But that would...
This is an example.
This is an example.
This is what you lawyers call an example.
Yeah, and this is actually a pretty good one, I think.
Exhibit A.
So but what you would do is you would relate it back to that original patent for the first pen because that gives you an earlier in time patent.
Oh, so you can like piggyback on an earlier one if it's like an upgrade to your first invention.
Exactly. And then when you're doing like patent.
I got that right.
Yeah, you did. And so when you're doing like patent
even
research.
Even a blind hog will find an acre now and then.
That's right. And you are a hog. So whenever you do patent research and things like that, that's one thing you always look for is you want to try to find the date, the earliest date that relates back, because that's the most important one.
So I should just tear up all these self-addressed stamped envelopes that I have to mail big ideas to myself that I was going to try to steal from other people and get them in the mail first.
Tell me you don't have like a filing cabinet at your house that's full of all these envelopes of things you've mailed yourself.
I do. When I hear somebody say something, if it sounds smart, I was going to write it down and stick it in an envelope, mail it to myself so I would cash in.
So basically, you've been plagiarizing people's things and mailing it to yourself.
Yes. And I didn't know what to do with them once I got them back, though. That's the problem. My other file drawer is filled with all the ones that I mailed to myself, but I didn't know what that would do for me.
So plagiarism actually falls under the theory of intellectual property or IP, because basically when you plagiarize something, that's the act of taking someone else's works or ideas and passing them off as your own without actually citing to them.
Oh, like Michelle did to, I mean, like Melania did to Michelle, huh?
No politics.
No sleep till Brooklyn.
Plagiarism comes from the Latin word plagiarius, which means kidnapper.
Kidnapper.
Latin. Yeah. So to plagiarize something means essentially like you're kind of kidnapping.
They're kidnapping their words.
Or ideas and thoughts.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, so that's going to do it for pretty much this episode.
It may do it for all episodes.
Yeah, I don't know about
after
that.
People hear that rap.
That rap. We'll have to see how that goes. That means it's time for
Legal Briefs. Briefs.
All right, so this is the part of the show where we kind of go back through some terms, and I ask Tommy if he remembers what they are. All right, so first of all, my favorite term from this one, IP.
IP freely. No, that's not it. That's the one that I always say, though. IP is intellectual property.
Right. And then you just say that as an acronym. Like you could talk about United Kingdom intellectual property. You'd say, oh, you mean the UK IP.
Oh, the UK IP. When I was in UK, IP'd.
Most people, when they're in the UK, probably pee at some point.
Well, I guess you would have to.
The next word or phrase, statute of monopolies.
Statute of monopolies. That has to do with the game and that four houses equal a hotel. No, that's not it. It has to do with the monopolies. Oh, man. I listened to the part where you said that you don't get to pass go collect 200 pounds as a penalty.
That's right. That's actually in the law books.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
No, not at all.
Man, you had me going. I was going to repeat that to somebody.
The statute of monopolies was one of the precursors to our copyright patent and IP law. And it was back in 1624 in England, alongside with the statute of Anne. Those were the two kind of things that predated our copyright and intellectual property law. So, yeah.
Okay. I missed that one.
The DMCA.
The DMCA is the rap group that brought back Aerosmith. Because you didn't know, but I can't believe you didn't know Aerosmith. I grew up with Aerosmith. They were, that really dates me. The Digital Mathematics Computation Association, or something to that effect.
Digital Millennium Copyright Act.
Yeah, well, I was right there, right next door, just a couple of vowels.
You were knocking on the door.
Can I buy a vowel, Vanna?
That was the law that was signed into effect by Bill Clinton in 1998, and that's the thing you see all the time on YouTube, taking down things that infringe on other people's intellectual property. And then this is just kind of a general theory, but public policy.
Public policy has to do with the protection of your IPs, with the stuff that's out there, like music and things like that. And now I'm just grasping at straws.
Well, public policy is what most laws are based on, that there has to be some sort of kind of underlying public policy as to why we have a law. A lot of times you're going to think to yourself, like, yeah, well, you know what? That law kind of makes good sense. You know, sometimes laws don't make good sense, but oftentimes there's a reason why there is a law. So, like, for example, and this is like a really strange law. I believe I looked this up some time ago. I think it's actually against the law to wear a hat in a theater in West Virginia.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I think it's still in the books last time I checked.
Well, then most every other guy in there is going to get thrown out.
Right. Well, you think about it, when this law was passed, there was probably a strong public policy argument for it because people wore those big hats back in the day and they were wearing them in theaters and you couldn't see the show that you paid money to see. So,
I mean, like, would you want to get the seat behind Abraham Lincoln?
John Wilkes Booth did.
Oh, yeah.
Is that too soon?
Yeah, you see what happened to him for wearing a hat?
Is that too soon?
I don't think so. It's in a couple centuries ago.
Yeah.
Anyway. We're going to get hate mail now. No. Damn it, Michael.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Court Appointed.
I'd have one shout out that I got to make, though.
Okay.
I got to acknowledge Abby Whitmire and Scout Grenier. I'm going to guess at the last name. They both sent me an information to tell me that I was at least half right. I'm a Hog was real. She was the daughter of a Texas governor in the early 1900s, I guess. And she became a philanthropist and donated lots of nice things around Texas and everything. But it is a myth that she had a sister named Eura, a common myth that most people say. So I'm a Hog was real. You're a Hog was not.
Oh, okay.
I was half right. That's about how I go through life, about half right.
In case you don't know what Tommy's talking about, which a lot of people don't oftentimes, he is referring to...
What?
He's referring to our last episode where he referenced someone named I'm a Hog and You're a Hog. So, and some people that are on our Facebook group, Court Appointed, posted an informative article about it explaining
it. They're just fuzzy memories. I don't know. They float in at the most inopportune times.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Court Appointed. I'm your co-host, Mike California.
You can't change your name at the end of it.
I like the name California. It's cool.
All right. Well, then I want to be Tommy Eastwood, the other co-host, Tommy Eastwood.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well, then not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out, though, right?
Usually.
Good.
This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Sprung. And I...